This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For 15 years, New Hampshire's system of local participatory democracy, the town meeting, has been in the midst of a great experiment as voters decide whether to hold on to their traditional meetings or switch to a private ballot system known as SB2. This newer form of local government creates two sessions to get residents' input, one for debating the issues and coming up with warrant articles, and the other for voting, which is conducted like a regular election with private ballots and polls open all day. This year in the Nashua suburb of Hollis, an effort to adopt SB2 failed, the third such attempt in recent years. It was a different outcome, however, in the Lakes Region town of Gilmanton, where voters narrowly adopted the SB2 format. One of the biggest arguments in favor of SB2 is that people just don't want to sit through a long town meeting, and that allowing them to vote anytime opens up the process to far more residents. Fiscal concerns are also at play. Behind the original push for SB2 was a belief that it would help lower local property taxes, because special interest groups couldn't dominate at a private voting booth the way some felt they could at town meeting. Today in The Exchange, we assess SB2, how it's worked, and whether it's lived up to its expectations. Let's hear from you, too. Which format does your town have, traditional meeting or SB2? And which do you think leads to a better outcome for your community? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests. Dennis DeLay is here, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which has done several reports on this issue. And Dennis, nice to see you. Thank you for
being
here.
Good morning, Laura. Great to be here.
Also with us, Doug Hall, former Republican lawmaker from Chichester, who's participated in town hall meetings for the past 30 years and has moderated for the town of Chichester for the past 14 years. And Doug Hall, nice to see you too. Welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and gentlemen, I'll start with you, Doug. An article in the Telegraph of Nashua described the two systems like this, and I love this, in a story about the choice between the choice that Hollis voters were facing. Voters will be asked to choose between fast food and a long, messy, made-from-scratch dinner. Now, I thought that was a great analogy. Yeah, SB2 is fast food, and town meeting is a long, messy, made-from-scratch dinner, which the reporter went on to say includes a lot of dishes to wash up afterwards. What do you think, Doug Hall? What analogy would you use to describe the differences between these two governing philosophies?
I had not heard that, but I think it's a pretty good one. The traditional town meeting is really a social event, and people do more than conduct town business. It takes a lot of time, typically. And if people are in a hurry and they want to vote on their town issues, then the so-called SB2 form of government makes a lot of sense. They can get in and out fairly quickly. So that description between fast food and making a long, messy dinner is pretty good.
What do you think, Dennis?
If you look at who has adopted or which towns have adopted and school districts have adopted SB2 over the time that it's been available to us. First of all, there was a lot of early adoption, even though there's been discussion through these many years. A lot of the adoption was done in the first 5 years of its availability. Right now, at the town level, there are about 8,000 people per town that have SB2 and about 2,700 people per town that are stayed with traditional town meetings. So the real determinant of whether a town adopts SB2 or not is I think, the size of the town. And towns that grow bigger or are bigger have tended to move to this sort of modified town meeting with two sessions, a deliberative session and a vote afterwards. And towns that have been smaller, people tend to know each other, have kind of stayed with the traditional town meeting.
Yeah, and there's a character issue here, almost a folklore issue here, Doug Hall. I mean, talk about why towns that are bigger and in the southern tier sometimes tend to go with this newer form of in-and-out town government.
Well, there's a history of larger communities having trouble conducting pure democracy that goes all the way back to the Greek democratic states. They had in Athens and in some of the other democratic states there a sort of a rule that you needed to keep the population at the meetings which were essentially town meetings of the eligible citizens, men. You had to keep it so that everybody in the meeting could hear anybody that spoke. Well, this is before microphones and speakers, so it really is a practical limit. In addition, in New Hampshire, as cities grew, Manchester, Concord, Portsmouth, Keene, their population was only around 8,000 on average when they changed from the form of local government, the traditional town meeting, to a city form of government. And the last one of those happened, I think, in the 1940s. And since then, we had a lot of population growth, and communities were struggling with how do you involve your citizens in a democratic process if you're too large for a town meeting and you don't, for one reason or another, want to have a representative form of a city council. So when this idea came up, those kinds of communities, as Dennis has pointed out, those larger communities tended to be the ones who grabbed at it. And in some ways, it probably is the most appropriate form right now for large communities. It would be very difficult to put 3,500 people into a town meeting.
Well, if you could get those people to show up. That's been a problem,
too. And that's why they wouldn't show up.
Well, and it's I hear you that it's partly a nice compromise between towns that don't want to become cities but are too big for this traditional town meeting. It seems to me, Dennis, though, it's also a lifestyle thing. I mean, people commute long distances to Boston, to Maine, wherever. People are newcomers. They maybe don't feel as connected. Talk about that a little
bit. Well, again, if you look at where the SB2 towns are, they're largely concentrated in the southern part of the state. There's a few of them up in the Lakes region. So those areas that tend to have more of their population are commuting to jobs either outside of the county or outside of the state even, are, again, the towns that have most likely adopted the SB2 form of government. I wanted to talk a little bit about something you mentioned earlier, and one of the – and you know, I'm sure Doug could chime in on this as well – is one of the other things that have been a concern about SB2 as it's been developed is the idea of a small group of people dominating town business or local business. And the thought, I think, originally was that if we move to this – representative or voting form of government, that will probably get away from the small group of people that have tended to dominate one way or the other. I mean, either, you know, towards spending more or towards spending less.
And some people feel intimidated speaking out.
That's right. They do. I mean, I've talked to lots of people that have, you know, been in a town that had town meeting and went to SB2 and have been really happy. That's one of the things that most bothered them, that they had to – they either felt uncomfortable about getting up or speaking, or when they did, they felt like, they were being pressured one way or the other. I think one of the concerns with SB2 is because of the way it's structured, and that is you have a deliberative session first, where a lot of things are decided, and including what's going to be on that ballot. And then that's followed by a ballot. You know, there is, I think, a concern among some folks that in the deliberative session, the same kind of thing can happen. Because what's the other thing that's been happening with SB2 is even though more people vote in the SB2 towns in the voting process.
Because they've got all day. And they
because
can just it, go to
because
the
voting they're booth. Not, yeah. There are fewer people that show up on average for a deliberative session at the beginning than for a town meeting session.
That's really interesting. So what's the outcome of that? That fewer people have
That's the concern, is that there are fewer people, you know, quote unquote, deciding town business through design of the warrants that people vote on than you would have in a traditional town meeting.
Our number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, we're looking again at the debate over SB2 towns, traditional town meeting towns. This new SB2 format has been around for about 15 years here in New Hampshire. Many towns have switched, but not all. Some have remained the same with traditional town meeting. We're looking at both sides and how this experiment in local democracy has been working out over the last decade and a half. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. If you live in an SB2 town for either your school meeting or town budget meeting, do you think the system works better or worse than the traditional town meeting format? Do you think SB2 has accomplished what it set out to do? Why or why not? Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post your comments on our Facebook page. And Doug Hall, I'd love your thoughts too on this idea that town meeting for some people can be an intimidating atmosphere. You know, who wants to vote against the new fire truck with the fire chief sitting right next to you?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I think one of the things that observing a traditional town meeting as moderator for a number of years, it tends to be the people who've lived in town the longest who will speak. I, as moderator, ask each year for people who are new in town and who are at the meeting to raise their hands. It's one way of checking to make sure that everybody's got their voting cards and all that. And usually it's 2, 3, 4 people in a meeting of 120, 125 who are new in town. And typically those who've been there, say, 15 years or less, and I'll just use that as a sort of random number, won't speak much. The people who get up and speak are the ones who may be second, third, even fourth generation town residents. And so the traditional town meeting has to do with the social fabric of the community. People who went to school with each other, they get up, they see each other, they haven't seen each other in months. The lunch break, they always want it to be longer than, you know, so they can chat more. And the newcomers who don't know anybody in town sort of sit by themselves, they feel a little isolated. And if that number of newcomers in town is large, it goes back to the same issue of they're much more likely to say, why am I doing this? And I think maybe there should be a better way.
You know, the hope for SB2 was that taxes would turn out to be lower, Dennis, because people, again, wouldn't feel intimidated not
right.
voting for spending. Has that turned out to be true?
Well, as I said earlier, the determining factor for whether you're an SB2 town or not seems to be the size of the population of the town. The larger towns are SB2s. The smaller towns tended to be town meeting towns. If you look at spending per person over the last 10 years or so, and I looked at the data from 2001 to 2010, the average spending per resident in the SB2 towns is about the same as it is in the non-SB2 towns, traditional town meeting times, and the growth has been about the same. And the property tax rates are not that much different from one group to another.
Interesting. All right, we will follow up after a short break and take your calls at 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from Dublin School, an independent college preparatory school celebrating the opening of Gillespie Hall and the Putnam Gallery. Dedication on May 12th, information at dublinschool.org. And from Sulloway and Hollis, providing legal solutions and effective advocacy for healthcare organizations and professionals, schools and businesses throughout New Hampshire. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 here on NHPR, the Friday News Roundup. We'll have all the questions about the week's top national stories, what's happened and why. Top journalists offer in-depth analysis of the week's major news. Go beyond the headlines on the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 here on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're looking at the debate surrounding town meetings and SB2 formats of local government. Let's hear from you, too. If you live in a town that has an SB2 format, how is it working for you? Again, we've been saying that the system has been in place for 15 years. What's been your experience with SB2? Or if your town has stuck with its traditional meeting, do you think that system works better for your community? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post your comments on our Facebook page. Joining us now is David Brooks. He's a reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. He's been following a lot of town and SB2 meetings this year. David, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, lots of towns and school districts in your area have been looking at this issue this year, how they want to govern themselves. But despite all the conversation, David, how much change did you see in the end?
Nothing changed.
Nothing?
Nothing, whether they were trying to adopt it or dump it. I actually had three different communities that were voting on it. The biggest was Hollis and Brookline, which are entirely traditional for town and school, and they have a joint cooperative school district. And in Hollis, there was an attempt to make the town SB2, the Hollis School District, which is just the school district for the elementary school in town, and make it SB2, and to make the cooperative SB2, which required a vote in both Hollis and Brookline. And all of them failed, although the one interesting thing is that the co-op vote in Brookline passed, but it didn't pass enough to overcome the failure in Hollis. Brookline is much smaller than Hollis.
So the cooperative school district, the Hollis-Brookline Cooperative District, looked at switching to SB2. The Brookline end of it said, yes, we want to do this, but the Hollis end of it said, no, we don't want to.
And Hollis That's right, and Hollis is about, I don't know, twice the size or something like that of Brookline. I mean, the two towns, like I assume most, if not all, cooperative school districts, the two towns are constantly fighting over who should pay what. And what share of it, and Brookline being the smaller town and the faster growing town, often thinks that it's it needs more say than it gets. So I suspect that was the push behind it, why Brookline supported it.
Wow.
But they didn't support it by a whole lot, and as I say, not nearly enough to overcome Hollis.
Well, it's kind of interesting to me, David. You know, several communities in your area, in your coverage area, looked at this, but as you told us, nothing changed. So why do you suppose that's the case?
Well, change is hard. I mean, for example, Mount Vernon, which is a small town, it's only 2,500 people, and last year they adopted SB2 just for the school district, and it's the local school district, which only covers the elementary school, so it's a very small school district. And they adopted it, and I'm not sure many people paid a whole lot of attention, and it got in effect. So there was an attempt to rescind it this year, and that also failed. And then in Wilton-Lineboro, which is another Wilton and Lineboro, two small towns that are very nearby as well, their cooperative school district, somebody attempted to install SB2 there, and that failed.
Wow.
So we had attempts to put it in that failed, attempts to take it out that failed.
Yeah. So who's behind these attempts to go to this SB2 format? Like, what sorts of people want this, David?
Oh, what I'm sure you've already heard, it's people concerned about taxes. The as it was 15 years ago, I was a reporter out there covering it when SB2 was first created, and all the arguments that came in were basically, as I'm sure you've already heard, that, you know, under traditional town meeting, all the teachers and the parents of elementary school kids come to the school district meeting and vote in everything, and all the taxpayers are overwhelmed. And so SB2 was pushed as a way for the working folks to kind of push back. That still is the point of view that comes on both sides of the argument, is that the argument in favor of SB2 is that it will reduce spending, or at least lower the spending increase, particularly on the school side, because it will allow the quote, working people who don't have kids in the school to actually participate, and the ones who can't necessarily make it to the town meeting.
Yeah, and yet we heard from Dennis DeLay, David, and I'm sure you know this,
yes,
that the taxes really haven't been that different.
I remember writing about that report like 5 or 6 years ago, exactly, or he's obviously updated it as well. You're right. Now, I believe his report found that it did slightly slow down capital expenditures. At least, again, this is half a dozen years ago. Things might have changed. That it made it a little bit harder to get the school addition or the new roof put on in SB2 towns.
But changes around the margins. No real big changes.
Exactly.
In taxes.
Exactly. But it's still sort of a philosophical thing. As the argument is, if you get SB2 and ballot, it will allow us to fight back against the people who want to, you know, spend all our money, whereas if you don't get it, it will allow the community to come together and make decisions with discussion the way, Daniel Webster intended it to be or something like that. So.
Well, David Brooks, it's great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
You bet.
That's David Brooks, reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, updating us on this debate over SB2 in town meeting in his area. And Doug Hall, did you want to jump in real quick there?
Yeah, I was going to say, back when this was being advocated as a new form of government in the legislature, the people who were behind that and drafted the bills and everything were local taxpayer groups and the Granite State Taxpayers Association. And the impetus from the beginning was clearly to sort of find a way to control spending that people felt the town meeting and school district meeting weren't giving them an opportunity to do. And interestingly, as Dennis has pointed out, that may or may not really have been the end result, but that's where the impetus came from in the beginning for the whole thing. And as David just reported, that's where the impetus is in the communities that he's covering today in whether to adopt it or not.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too, Dennis, where he said lots of towns discussed sticking with it, scrapping it, you know, whatever, and nothing changed in
the
end.
And again, you know, as I said, there was a lot of early adoption. So in the first 5-6 years, most of the towns that were going to get SB2 had adopted it. And there was, you know, there's a little change every couple of years, but not much.
I just should point out that it requires a 60% vote to adopt it or to rescind it. So it's not a simple majority to do that. And it's good that it's a 60% in changing either way, because otherwise you'd have one form of government this year, another form next year, and you'd be back and forth. So it is hard to take and become SB2 because you need 60%, and it's also hard to go from SB2 back because you need 60%.
I see. So it's a big threshold. Again, our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. One of the towns that one of you gentlemen mentioned is Mount Vernon, and Paul is calling in from Mount Vernon. Hi, Paul. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. I guess I had a two-part question. The first is, can your guest talk a little bit about the effort to restrict the action at deliberative session in terms of amending petition warrant articles, the to see legislation? And then secondly, what fights do you anticipate on how the default budget is crafted? Because it seems to me that in an SB2 such a situation, crafting the default is really where, in some ways, the power lies.
Paul, thanks a lot. Great points that we really should bring up. And again, for the uninitiated gentleman, because a lot of our listeners aren't even, you know, they live in cities, so
right,
they don't
sure.
even know what's going on here. Mm-hmm. But just remind us, Dennis, this effort to restrict what comes out of those deliberative sessions. There has been some monkey business there.
Well, again, what in the deliberative, so this in this two-part process, a deliberative session, then the vote, in the deliberative session, warrant articles can't necessarily be changed, but you can change some of the wording, and you can also set the size of the appropriation. And there was actually one case a few years ago where one town set the size of the appropriation so high as that they knew that they would be defeated, you know, when the vote came around. So you can have some change around. The other thing that Paul was talking about is the so-called default budget. And that's another difference, without getting too far into the weeds, that's another difference in SB2 versus town meeting, is in SB2 you have a default budget, so-called, which is essentially, there are some changes, but essentially equal to last year's budget. So the way the legislation was crafted is if you don't vote for the new operating budget, you go back to what's called the default budget, and it's roughly equivalent to last year's budget. We looked at a study that looked at that as well, and there aren't, you know, the sort of adoption of a default budget really hasn't occurred that much. There were about 47 towns that had SB2 in the early part of the last decade, 2002 to 2006. And within those towns over the 5 years, and they've all had SB2 for a very long time, only about 16% of the time did the default budget come in because they couldn't agree on the operating budget.
Doug, there has been some monkey business, people taking warrant articles and, you know, chopping off almost all the language except the first three words. I mean,
well, there has.
At the deliberative sessions.
And that also happens in traditional town meetings. And nobody's complained about that. The problem with the deliberative sessions and this happening is that when SB2 was created, people thought there would be as many people showing up for deliberative sessions as there were for the town meeting. Well, that doesn't happen. Maybe you get a quarter of the number.
Really?
And so
that
therefore,
much smaller.
And therefore, that meeting can actually be controlled by a smaller group of people than a town meeting. And so it has sort of devolved over time that groups do come into the deliberative session and make a change that they want, and then everybody is faced with either voting that up or down. So if you want to have a deliberative session, you have to be able to deliberate. Otherwise, you're just going to put the whatever the selectmen want or the school board wants onto the ballot for votes.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation, gentlemen. This is Peter Basilier, town and school district moderator for Milford, one of the first towns to make the switch to SB2. He's been moderator for 4 years, also served on the town's school board and school budget committee. And Peter Basilier, thanks a lot for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome, Laura.
So why did your town decide to make the switch years back?
I think it was because we had grown to a very large size, and the nature of our meetings was that they were getting very, very long. We, back then, in 95, were spending hours and hours debating the merits of various warrant articles and sections of the school district operating budget, and it was just getting to be an extremely long night, and in some cases having to go into a second evening in order to complete the town or the school's business.
Wow. So I have some specific questions, but just generally, Peter, how's it working out for you?
Well, it's a little bit frustrating in the sense that we don't have the debate between the townspeople that we used to have. The beauty of a town meeting form of government is that everybody present can speak their mind and oftentimes be swayed by the arguments that they hadn't considered or have inaccuracies corrected. Today, as the speaker just pointed out, very few people show up for the deliberative session. I would say both the town and the school district meetings this year in Milford had less than 100 people present. And many of those were people who are employees of the town or the school that live in town, so they're certainly entitled to vote, and where they are certainly either in their role or as a voter or both. And so the result is that the Board of Selectmen and the school district, the school board, create a budget, and very few people are there to discuss the merits of it. And that is the major change. We don't have that kind of debate, and so people are relying on word of mouth on the street, whatever the newspapers or they can find online for educating themselves about a topic. That's what they rely on in making their decision at the polls.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that, because I remember talking to another SB2 town person who said that that's a concern, that the voter may not be as well informed, and yet his particular town had made a huge effort to inform folks who didn't go to the deliberative. You know, there was a local cable TV station that aired the deliberative sessions over and over again. Local newspapers made a real effort, local websites. Do you folks in Milford do any of that to try and at least get people educated who aren't at the deliberative session?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Absolutely. There's a voter's guide that goes out that has all of the warrant articles and the operating budgets for both governing bodies, as well as the positions of the respective boards and the respective budget committees. So there is that that goes out to every household in town that's mailed. The Granite Town Media, our public access, broadcasts all of all the Board of Selectmen meetings, as well as the town budget committee meetings, and next year we expect them to also broadcast the school budget committee meetings. So it's all possible for a person who wants to gain information, and certainly they can then go to a meeting and ask for more details. But I think generally speaking, though, most folks don't do that unless they are someone that has been involved with the town at that level already, or has a particular interest in a particular topic of personal impact.
Well, and Peter, as we said earlier, every year at town meeting time, there are a couple towns that debate this. We heard earlier from David Brooks talking about towns in the Nashua area that debated this year. What advice would you give a town that's considering making the switch? What would you tell them to consider, given your experience?
Well, my point would be that you're giving up a lot in the fact that the practical result is you don't have a good town-wide debate on the issues when you move from the town meeting form of government to SB2. In doing that, you have to then try to educate the community about the pros and cons in a balanced way, because you are giving up the ability at a meeting for the board to make its position, the budget Budget Committee to make its position, and then to answer any questions and respond to any concerns that the voters have in general. You know, the other thing to bear in mind here is that as fewer and fewer people attend the deliberative sessions, it puts more and more responsibility on the boards to come up with a reasonable budget, including the warrant articles, because the likelihood of it changing is negligible. In Milford this past year, as an example, at our deliberative session, we spent about 4 hours debating an $11 million operating budget and about 20 warrant articles. We spent 50 minutes debating the $36 million operating budget for the school.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's critically important that people, as one of the gentlemen just pointed out, attend the deliberative session if you want to have an influence on any particular article or the operating budget.
Well, Peter, it's really good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Laura.
Peter Basilier, town and school district moderator from Milford, again, one of the first towns to make the switch to SB2. And Dennis DeLay, Doug Hall, I've got several emails here that I'd like to share with you. Here's one from Garth in Mason. He says, in a survey I did in 2009 of the 62 SB2 towns, average size, number of registered voters of SB2 towns, 5,472. Average number of voters attending, including town officials, 83. Average participation in SB2 deliberations, percentage of regular voters, 2.5%, Doug Hall. According to Garth's analysis, i.e., one voter out of every 40 is participating.
And I think that's probably exactly right, and it has been pretty much from the beginning, although it may have decreased a little bit. The participation in the deliberative session is low like that, but the other piece of that is if you counted the number of votes cast finally in the voting, that it would be greater than the number of people who show up at the town meeting. If the town meeting has 15%, you might have 40 or 45% in the voting booth in an SB2 community. So you lose on one end, you gain on the other.
All right. And Dennis, I want your quick thoughts, and then we'll go to a break.
Well, again, there's not to add another level of complication to this, but there's another, and Peter from Milford made me think of it, there's another sort of form of governance that comes into play here, and that's a municipal budget committee. So we have actually four different combinations. You can have a municipal budget committee and an SB2 town, municipal budget committee in a non-SB2 town, and then the other, you know, two combinations. So the answer, I think, gets a little bit more complicated.
All right. We'll talk more about that later on. Okay. Right now, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us.
I'm Kate McNally. New England's own Cheryl Wheeler joined me recently live on stage at the Tupelo Music Hall for a few good questions and some great music.
Well, here come Floyd, tally-ho, alley come, in we go, dark, 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 blow, 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 rain, 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 Florida to Maine.
We'll listen back to that concert this Sunday night at 9 on The Folk Show on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from the Nature Conservancy, celebrating Earth Day April 22nd with guided walks through its preserves in Manchester, North Conway, and on Great Bay, nature.org/New Hampshire. And from Summit Wealth Group, specializing in retirement distribution strategies for the generation nearing retirement. Information at summitwg.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a debate that's been going on for about 15 years here in New Hampshire. What's the best way to run local government, whether it's traditional town meeting or a newer format called SB2? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. If you live in an SB2 town, do you think that is the best option for your community? If you live in a town meeting town, what do you think of that option? Do you still attend town meeting? Maybe, as many people feel, you feel it takes too long. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Doug Hall, former Republican lawmaker from Chichester, who's participated in his town hall meetings for many years. Also with us, Dennis DeLay. He's with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which has done several reports on this issue. And gentlemen, let's go to our callers now. This is Fred in Nashua. Hi, Fred. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, I was involved with the Ghana State taxpayers. There was a big movement behind us, Me Too. And one of the things that upset us was the manipulation of parliamentary procedures. And Doug Holt can probably comment to that. Typically, special interests, especially school interests, would stay around. And when all the town folks, people would leave, let's say after midnight, they would do a reconsideration vote. When people woke up in the morning, they found that what they thought they had all voted on had all been reset early in the morning by a few insiders. And that's one of the big motivators behind getting SB2 done.
So, Fred, SB2 helped avoid some of that late-night shenanigans, huh?
Inside manipulations by insiders. Like you say, employees would attend these things. And they knew the tricks. They've been around a long time. They knew how to manipulate the parliamentary stuff. The ordinary town folks don't understand all these parliamentary tricks.
Fred, thanks a lot for calling in. Dennis, what do you think?
Well, again, I wasn't or at least paying attention to SB2 back in that time. I think probably Doug was paying more attention than I was. Again, that's been the concern, that small groups of people can control the process. But again, I'd submit that you could probably even have a smaller group of people that control the process in the deliberative session.
Yeah, and as we heard from Doug, even fewer people are going to the deliberative.
I think there have been situations where that reconsideration motion becomes a problem for people one way or another. It may not even be the budget. And one way to handle that is that the moderator typically proposes the rules of the meeting. My meeting, I propose rules that say if a particular thing happens, then we will not have a motion for reconsideration. That motion won't be considered, which gives everybody sort of a guarantee that having voted on an issue, then it's done, and you can go home if you're not interested in the next 5 warrant articles. So it can be handled by rules. It evidently wasn't being handled that way. There are even ways around the rules, but nevertheless, it was one of the motivations, and that motivation was based on the issue of, well, they spent more than we thought we were going to spend. So it goes back to the tax issue.
All right. Well, Fred, thanks for that call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email in Carol from Lee, which I believe switched last year to SB2. She says, our town went through its first SB2 deliberative session this year. It was an education. What surprised many folks was the fact that through a warrant article's intent or wording though a warrant article's intent or wording cannot be changed, the funding amount can be. After discussion of a couple warrant articles, the funding amount was reduced to zero, which meant that citizens arriving at the voting booth 3 weeks later voted on an item which would not receive funding anyway. Carol says the effect is to give the deliberative session more strength than would seem possible at first look. I think that's the point you've been making, Doug Hall, this hour.
Yes, that's a good example. And Lee is not the only town that's had that happen. There have even been a couple towns where I think Dennis alluded to a number is put in that's so large that makes sure that it'll be voted down when it gets to the booth.
All right.
You know, again, if you look at over time, at least for the towns, I haven't looked at the school districts, the spending level per person in the SB2 towns is about the same as the spending level. So even though we've gone through this process and we have these concerns, if you look at the numbers tell you that spending levels per person are about the same in SB2 versus non-SB2, and the growth has been about the same, at least over the last 10 years.
Let's take another call. This is Mark in Sandown. Hi, Mark. Go ahead. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
So I was calling in because in our town we've had several issues, like a land purchase or an attempt to defeat a change in our current use allocation to a conservation fund. And what the SB2 requires us to do is make sure that you stack the deliberative session with enough voters to make sure nobody does what I think the last caller said, is change the language and zero it out or turn it into a study so you can get through that process, which means you've got to muster a fair number of people to get into the deliberative. And then after that, you've got to launch a campaign to educate the voter.
So, Mark, you're saying SB2 hasn't changed that manipulation that Fred referred to?
Not really. I don't think so. It's, if you don't put enough bodies at deliberative, which we had happened in our town to this year, where, you know, 20 people changed a Warren article into a study.
Wow. Right. So what's the answer, Mark, then? Is there no perfect solution?
Well, I think that deliberative shouldn't be allowed, which the law says you can't materially change a Warren article, but it does let you turn it into a study or change an amount, and I think that's totally wrong. If a Warren article gets to deliberative, people should discuss the merit, not change the entire intent, which when you zero out a Warren article or change it to a study, then the voters get that and they say, why am I voting on this? What's the right answer?
Right. Mark, thanks a lot for calling in. Dennis, it does make me wonder, you know, it seems like there's problems with both these systems.
Well, there's nothing perfect. One of the members of our board, who happens to be the town administrator of Durham, and I were at a session a couple of years ago up in the Lakes region talking about this issue. And I like what he said. He said, well, each town will adopt the form of government that's best for its town, whether it's city government type or SB2 or a town administrator. There are a few towns in the state that have a town administrator form of government. They tend to be small towns, but they feel that they need, you know, somebody who's working full time on the issue and the issues that face the town in order to have that type of governments. So, and then, as I said before, a number of towns have adopted municipal budget committees, and there are a whole set of rules associated with those. One of the rules is that if the town decides not to adopt the municipal budget recommendation, they can't increase that recommendation more than 10% in total. So there's another, you know, rule that we have to sort of think about when thinking about town governance.
Do you want to jump in there, Doug?
I'd just like to mention a couple things as examples that came up in our town meeting this year that couldn't happen in an SB2. The selectmen had proposed a budget. It was on the warrant. And subsequent to having it on the warrant, they learned a few things, and they felt that they could reduce that by $25,000. Let's say I'll just use that number. So the Board of Selectmen, when the article is in front of us, say, okay, we want to amend that by reducing it by $25,000. Of course, everybody goes along with that. But so there was no opportunity in an SB2 town between the time the deliberative session is set and the voting for new information to come that might even reduce a budget. The second thing was we have warrant articles that we vote on. This year we had one where the selectmen are saying if warrant article 6 passes, then we're going to recommend that warrant article 7 be defeated. But if warrant article 6 is defeated, we want to have warrant article 7. So we have option A versus option B on a particular thing. You don't have that in an SB2 situation because people go into the booth and they're voting on both at the same time, and the outcome of one doesn't then inform what should be voted on the second one. So you lose those two capabilities.
On the other hand, in some southern New Hampshire towns especially, you have large numbers of people who commute to Massachusetts for work or commute long distances, and they have no voice at all in a town meeting. At least in SB2, they get to vote on something.
Why would they not have an opportunity to vote at their town meeting?
Because they're commuting long distances. And
if they're away on the meeting time, of course, yeah. And that wouldn't matter whether they were close to Massachusetts or not. But that is a problem. Our meetings are Saturdays starting at 10 in the morning, typically go to 3 or 4. A couple times I've had to warn people that I wanted to see Saturday Night Live and I had to finish up.
All right, let's take another call. This is Gretchen in Grafton. Hi, Gretchen. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you for picking up my call. In Grafton, I was involved in helping establish SB2. And the reasons for that was because our town meetings were sparsely attended. I found that you might have 40 people who would show up, and they are generally town officials and people who would benefit from warrant articles or appropriations in the budget, i.e. town employees. So I found that the general populace of Grafton wasn't having a democratic opportunity to be able to express how they felt on the tax impact they were going to have, nor were they having a situation where things were explained to them. I hear over and over again about town meetings being able to inform people how to vote. Well, that was never the case in Grafton. We never had a budget committee explain to us why the appropriations were being proposed and what impact it would have, nor did we have selectmen who would explain to us what was occurring. with SB 2 now in Grafton, we went from having 40 people attend town meeting to 400 people voting. To me, we might be unique in that. In our deliberative sessions, we have far more. You know, we might have 80 people show up now at deliberative sessions to participate. And one of the problems we have is sort of like where Fred pointed up earlier is the parliamentary procedure. A lot of people don't understand how it needs to be done. We had the problem with the reconsideration vote during regular town meeting where we voted down a new fire station. People went home. Next thing they found out, we had a new fire station.
Really? Wow, Gretchen.
Yeah. And so we've had to, at deliberative session, unfortunately, every so many times after we voted, we take a motion for reconsideration into account. And I vote against that because I feel the deliberative session is an opportunity for us to be able to discuss what is being proposed. And as we work our way down through the budget and what happens, we might want to go back and tweak some of those things that we were happy with before.
So it sounds like it's working for you in Grafton.
Well, yeah. Gotcha. I mean, and with the conversation that the other man talked about as far as conservation issues, I was a Conservation Commission chairperson. I proposed a warrant article to make the road that I live on a scenic road at SB2 meeting. That was changed from basically starting at point A and ending at point A. And yet I still support SB2 because I feel my townspeople are being represented.
Okay, Gretchen, I'm going to let you go.
You know, right.
Thank you so much. That's a great story. And here it didn't even work out for her, Dennis, and she still thinks it's a good idea.
Yeah. And I think it's a good idea for the towns that want to adopt it and find value in it. And as you know, as I keep coming back to the fact that there doesn't seem to be that much of a difference when you get to the numbers in terms of, you know, spending levels or tax rates in SB2 versus non-SB2 towns.
Well, it was interesting to hear from her, too, because it seems like a lot of the SB2 towns are these, you know, rapidly growing southern tier towns, but that's not Grafton.
No.
So thank you very much for that, Gretchen. And here's an email from David. He says, SB2's separation of deliberation and decision sessions, so one day for deliberating, another day for voting, has severed the consensual nature of the town meeting in pursuit of efficiency and economy. David says it's time to reevaluate the impact of SB2 and look at computer and cable augmented sessions and town meetings to better serve the community. Let's use technology to reintegrate the community. Interesting thought, Doug Hall. What do you think?
I think it's a very good thought. In fact, I would even go more broadly and say we ought to be thinking about other forms of governance that continue to maintain a democratic process, but allow people a little more flexibility. Technology may be able to help in that. The only thing I would worry about in technology is trying to do some sort of internet-based voting, which to me raises a whole bunch of issues. If we're concerned enough to want to have photo IDs for voters, having somebody logging in on a computer and voting on something where you can't even identify who they are or how many times they voted for their brother or their wife or whatever, I think that's a problem. But using it to inform people and to have deliberation, I think there are a lot of things that could be done there.
Yeah. Dennis, what do you think?
There are other forms of governance that in other states that we could look at. I mean, in some states, you actually vote by mail. You know, we don't tend to do that in New Hampshire, but for elected officials by mail. And, you know, again, I think technology being applied on the information part of things, I think, is reasonable. I guess I share Doug's concerns that especially when we seem to be concerned now about knowing exactly who's voting and whether they're qualified to vote or not, perhaps the internet's a little bit too – has too many holes in it in order to allow that as a voting process. But certainly as an information gathering process, I think it has a lot of value.
Here's an email from Donna in Plymouth, and this is a great email to close out on. I'm going to throw it to you first, Dennis. Donna says, one of the problems with SB2 is if the budget is voted down, it defaults to the previous year's budget. This is not necessarily lower than the proposed budget. SB2 could backfire on the people who say they are voting to help the taxpayers. Donna says, I believe SB2 would not be a bad thing, but some of the rules have to be looked at and changed. This gets into what we were talking about earlier. Is there a way to tweak this so that it works better?
Well, again, that's an important point, that with SB2, there's this other budget that gets created that's the so-called default budget, which is, you know, can be – it's generally about the same as last year with some minor changes to it. There are some things that are exempt and that don't have to be included in that number. But again, if you look at the history of that and how that's worked out, there's of about – you know, 50 or so towns that have had SB2 for a considerable period of time, the default budget has only been adopted about 16% of the time. Now, there's, of course, exceptions to every rule. There are a few towns that, you know, in the five-year period that that was looked at, you know, every year they went to the default budget. On it, but on average, though, it was, you know, maybe one time in a five-year period for most of the towns. You know, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I think it's another thing that probably should be looked at again. You know, again, I'm all for expanding the ways that we govern ourselves and increasing the amount of representation that we have in the governing process.
All right. Well, this has been really interesting, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Dennis DeLay, good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks, Laura.
Dennis DeLay, economist at the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which, as I said, has done several reports on this issue. Doug Hall, thank you for your time.
I'm happy to have participated.
Doug Hall, former Republican lawmaker from Chichester, who's participated in town hall meetings for the past 30 years, moderated for Chichester for the past 14. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.